FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it's June 7th, 2017. Interesting things happening around the planet, bank bail-in, bailout, and hybrids, so much more. And here to discuss is Andrew Hoffman of MilesFranklin.com. And just send any emails to kl@kerrylutz.com if you have any questions. Andy, good morning.
Good morning. And as usual, we have a tremendous amount to discuss. Of course, you know, tomorrow is Super Thursday, where James Comey and the ECB and the England elections, and, you know, but I mean, there's so many things we have to get to, the whole cryptocurrency thing, gold breaking out above its trend lines. But I don't want to miss, as you said, I made sure that you got it in first. I don't want anyone to miss, in this world of historic market manipulation, the news that came out today in Spain. I mean, when you talk about, as I call it, PIMBY, but precious metal bullish, everything else bearish, we are talking about the sixth largest bank in Spain today. What would be the sixth largest bank in America? I don't know. I don't even know anymore what the banks are, but it would be a pretty big, well-known bank.
It'd be like BB&T or somebody.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. They were bailed in and bailed out today. We're talking about and I'm not underestimating. This was a combination of Cyprus and Bear Stearns at the sixth largest bank in Europe. And of course, the commentary is markets are relieved that this happened. And I'm thinking to myself, aside, you know, obviously it's the market manipulation. The government comes in and buys the stock market up. But I'm saying they're relieved. Now, tell me exactly who would be relieved by this. What happened was, if you are a stock investor, your stock went to zero. And it was very recently a couple of bucks. You know, I mean, it's probably from where it's 5 years ago. It was probably, I don't even know, probably 10, 20 bucks. But, you know, a year ago, it was probably 2 or 3 bucks. And it's zero. They were bought for 1 euro. I don't mean 1 euro per share. 1 euro, which is much worse than even Bear Stearns, which went from like $80 a share and then was acquired for like $2 a share by JP Morgan. And when I say by JP Morgan, I mean the U.S. government acquired it and gave it to JP Morgan because they basically guaranteed all of Bear Stearns' bad loans and toxic products. Okay, so the stockholders wiped out. Bondholders bailed in. They took everything. The bonds went, I think the bonds dropped like 70% today. All gone. You lost everything. And as for the people who are in the bank, you know, like depositors, I guess the people are relieved that the depositors were okay. Well, if I'm a depositor in the sixth largest bank and I see that it just went bankrupt completely because of insolvency, I would probably take my money out. Even if it was, and look who bought them, by the way, Banco Santander. Okay, they're the biggest bank in Spain, but they're a basket case also. In fact, they have one of the biggest subprime lending exposures of any bank in all of Europe. They're a perennial basket case. And so that's who, and again, when they say acquired, it's the exact same thing. They said backed by the ECB. So the ECB handed an insolvent bank to another insolvent bank, wiped out the shareholders and bondholders, and they don't think that the depositors who are, quote, relieved are going to be scared, let alone if you're in any other bank in Europe, that you're going to be bailed in. I mean, this was just a bail-in, I believe, of bondholders. But the next one will be a bail-in of the depositors, like in Cyprus. And so this is tremendously, tremendously negative news for the global financial economy, for anyone who believes ridiculously so that there's solvency left, particularly in Europe. And again, we're talking about Spain here. OK, Spain, in which Catalonia, which is 30% of the nation's GDP and tax base, is likely to secede this fall. Right. What will that do to a nation that's already a basket case financially with insolvent banks? So no one should be relieved at this. As I've said, historic market manipulation is setting us up for catastrophe. Dot-com valuations in a Great Depression era. Well, today's news made that Great Depression era that much more great. And by the way, you know, we talk about things, you know, shocks to the system. OK, again, No one has spoken more about the fraud that is OPEC and the fraud that is their production agreement. And the from day one, I said, there's not a chance in hell that this thing is going to make prices go higher. Yep. And the only thing that took them off their 2008 lows was the oil PPT. And all they could do was get it to $50 a barrel, which is still a horrible price, which is why the global E&P industry is reeling. It's the capital expenditures are down. The cash flow is down to nothing. That's at $50 oil. And now we're down to 47. But after this production agreement, immediately after they said we're extending it, prices plunged. So again, everyone's is not buying this BS anymore. And then yesterday's news, and even to this minute, I'm still not quite sure exactly what the deal is, where Saudi Arabia and a bunch of others basically blackballed Qatar and right. said, you're out. We're gonna bomb you. You know, we're naval blockading you. You're a supporter of terrorism. And from what I read, apparently they share their largest gas field with Iran, who is becoming the mortal enemy of Saudi Arabia. So again, when you talk about all the cheating in the OPEC agreement, to you know, atop of the fact that it's not enough to start with. I mean, look at the shale production exploding higher. So now you have Iran and Saudi Arabia close to war, Qatar, which is essentially close to war. And so everyone knows now that this OPEC agreement, even if it meant anything in the first place, is likely to collapse because of noncompliance. So again, you know, you're seeing memes left and right of things falling apart. I'm looking at the retail sector. Okay, Joe's Crab Shack files for bankruptcy today. Gymboree files for bankruptcy today. Sears closes 66 more stores. The restaurant index collapsing. Look at the jobs report. I mean, my God, we just learned yesterday. As if the math isn't kind of ingrained in anyone's head who's watching this, that since the financial crisis, 93% of all the jobs that the NFP has created had been due to the birth death model. 93%, meaning yeah. they literally have only 7% of the jobs that they create. And that's aside from all these seasonal adjustments and the other BS that they throw in there. And the fact that the NFP report in the first place is literally they survey a handful of businesses. And then they say, well, this is what the whole thing, let's apply some adjustments to it and make it around 200,000 every month. But the fact is that 93%, only 7% of the jobs that they even purport to have been created over the past decade are even backed by anything, because the birth death model, which basically has been around for decades now, because you know, just like they changed the CPI numbers years back when the inflation started going up, they added this birth death model when the U.S. started to go into secular manufacturing decline. It's that simple. And so this birth death model basically essentially says that there's all these jobs being created and lost because small businesses that are kind of under the radar are birthing and deathing constantly. And, you know, according to the BLS, it's always a net gain. It doesn't matter. There was actually a positive birth death adjustment in 2008 and 2009. So they were saying that businesses were coming into being faster than they were leaving during the greatest financial crisis of our time. But now, as we're learning, it's not even learning because you see it every month. I talk about the birth death model every month, that 93% of the jobs come from this model. And if you look at the one thing I talk about constantly with the birth death model is that there's actual proof out there. The number of small firms, because when you look at the number of small firms since the financial crisis, that's when it tipped over. There have been more small firms that have died than been born. So how could they be reporting a positive birth death model adjustment for eight or 10 years when it's clear that the small businesses are dying faster than they're birthing? So again, you know, the whole meme of the jobs report is just dying. And when you look at all of the other economic data, I mean, even the soft data is getting weak now, but the hard data has never been worse in our lifetimes. Maybe for a few minutes during the height of the financial crisis and after 9/11, when you were in like the deer in the headlights. But aside from that, this is the worst it's been since the Great Depression, which, as we also learned this week, the past 10 years GDP growth of 1.33%, which is far more goosed and lied about than way back in the Depression, is exactly the same as the 10 years of the 1930s. So again, all that's falling apart. And on top of that, the actual job numbers that the government's putting out, like the one they put out Friday, are terrible too. So everything about Trumpflation is dead now. The only thing that's left is the soaring stock market. That's it. Interest rates plunging, commodities plunging, copper, oil, the dollar is plunging, gold is going up. So all that's left, I mean, we talk about last to go markets. The Dow Jones propaganda average is truly the last to go of the last to go of the last to go. The one thing separating us from the 2008 crisis, the 2000 crisis, the 1930s crisis, all combined times 10, is the Dow Jones propaganda average being held up. That's how thin this veneer is right now.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. You know, the birth death we've known for forever has just been a way to goose the numbers when they're really not behaving the way they like. And now it's just become a substitute for growth. And I saw that article, 7% of the jobs. I mean, come on. And then we know from the other statistics that formations of new businesses are at all-time lows. Less people are starting businesses than ever. And that's like the ultimate negative sentiment on the economy if people aren't willing to start, when you think about it, Carrie,
new businesses, because we my wife and I and friends, we're always talking about the fact, like in Denver here, we talk about back in New York you have all those mom and pop restaurants, and here it's just all chains. And I haven't been in New York in 10 years now, so things have changed there too. But it's not just, look, this is a cultural diversity here, and there's plenty of money here and people are moving in. And yes, there are some small businesses, but the fact is people don't open restaurants here because we don't care. We're Midwesterners. We don't have the refined tastes that they have in other places. It's because you can't compete as a small business. You literally can't compete with the Olive Garden. I just pick a name, the Olive Garden. You just can't compete with them because some of those chains have made their food taste better. I mean, they have economies of scale. They can put money into cooking and stuff like that to make it better. But more importantly is, it's almost impossible these days to, I remember back from the movie Midnight Run, that with Charles Grodin and De Niro.
Right. Yeah.
And Grodin was the accountant, and Charles Grodin wanted to open De Niro wanted to open a coffee shop. And he's going, as your accountant, I'd advise you against that. Almost all restaurants, fail, whatever. And I'm going, that was like 25 years ago. Now you wouldn't dream of opening a hardware store near Home Depot or a restaurant near, we have like a couple of these big malls here that have, big chain restaurants, lots and lots of
right.
I mean, unless you're in like Manhattan, where not only are there so many people there, but you have all this high concentration of ultra wealthy people who couldn't care less, right? I mean, and there's not many places in America where you have that. It's impossible. So again, that's just one example of how small businesses, they are just not opening. There is no way. Retail, no way. Look, the big chains are going out of business.
Yeah.
You think someone would open a small retail store, except like some antique shop in some old town by some, retired person who just does it as a hobby? No. I mean, small businesses are dying. The birth death model could easily be negative, 93% instead of positive 93%.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, just the entrepreneurial spirit has really taken a hit. And like the government wants consolidation. They encourage it with tax breaks and relaxed
regulations.
Antitrust enforcement and regulations as well, because they'd rather get a few checks from a few businesses than thousands of checks from thousands of businesses in any industry. And it's much easier to keep the natives from being restless.
I mean, think about it, right? Yeah. In the bullion business at Miles Franklin here, just in the time I've been here, what we've had to go through from a regulatory standpoint. I mean, every time I talk to Andy Schechtman, I feel like the words AML KYC come up and how much we have to do to deal with this stuff. We now accept Bitcoin, for instance. You know what we had to do to go through to get that? And still, after all that, we're like, well, I think we're only going to accept it up to $10,000 because we're terrified of all these regulations. And, in the state of Minnesota, on top of that, is the only state in the country, I mean, this is good if you're a buyer, but it's difficult for us, that decided to regulate the bullion business 2 years ago. So now we have credit checks and we have to do all these tests and a monster surety bond that the owners personally have to put up. The barriers to entry in this business, I'm talking about, this is a small retail business, insurmountable. And that's just another example. So if you're going to tell me that the birth death model says that all these small businesses opening up, it's complete and utter BS. It's just like everything else that the government publishes. And when I talk about the only things that have held up, this recovery, whatever you want to call it, have been market manipulation, money printing, and propaganda. The market manipulation, often there's never been anything like it. And really, the funny thing is that it picked up. It took this huge leg up on the night of the election, of all things.
Right.
Donald Trump coming into office, which I would have thought would have made them back off, has made them go even more berserk. I guess you could say it's more because things are just accelerating so badly in the economy where it doesn't matter. But I mean, it really, the separation between economic reality and markets, really, almost to the day, is where you saw it. And of course, the money printing, you know, I laugh about how people say, oh, the Fed's out and it's a tighter time. No. Right now, this minute in time, there's $250 billion a month being printed by central banks overtly. ECB, yeah. Bank of Japan, bunch of other ones. That's the most of all time. And the Bank of Japan, ECB, their balance sheets now caught up to the Fed, even though, of course, the Fed does so much off balance sheet. Who knows what it really is? Mm-hmm. And look where the economy is right now. And, you know, there's obviously going to be a lot more. That's what the definition of a Ponzi scheme, these fiat regimes. They create more and more debt, so they have to print more and more. And eventually, I mean, it could be this year. The slightest loss of control and the Fed's back in the game, too. And at that point, you know, gold will be no offer. And I say no offer. Yeah, you'll find it somewhere, but it won't be anywhere near these prices because the Fed is going to be forced either by a black swan event, by the sheer force of the economy collapsing. And to the point where, look, if they can't even put out good jobs numbers with all their statistical rigging and the world is really starting to get onto this stuff, what's going to happen now? I mean, so I think that the time is coming. The gold and silver markets know it. That's why you have the gold. Both markets have decidedly broken above their 5.5-year trend lines. Gold is well above its 200-week moving average. Silver is, what, 5 cents from it right now?
I
mean,
right.
So we're talking about, I mean, I can't underestimate how important it is to break these trend lines, because I've said all along about the whole thing with technical analysis with precious metals is that it's useless, completely useless on any short term time frame and even intermediate, because that's what the government is, the cartel is doing. They are holding prices under these moving averages and trend lines so that it keeps traders bearish. The problem is when you do something so for so long and so egregiously, well, the first thing you do is you create massive imbalances, right? By holding the price down, you've caused demand to explode and you've caused mine supply to collapse and inventories to collapse. So inadvertently, you've created the supply shortage that's going to destroy you, which is, you know, where we are right now. And the other part of that, of holding the prices down for so long, and I'm losing track, is yes, on a technical, you create these technical resistance levels, which are so unbelievably powerful that they're extremely, extremely hard to break through. I mean, we're talking about a 200-week moving average takes a lot of work to get through. It takes years and years. That's why they had to do the April 2013, you know, alternative currencies destruction attack to get it below it. You know, when Obama met the top 10 too big to fail bank CEOs on Thursday, and Goldman on Thursday night puts out a aggressive short sell recommendation, and then Friday and Saturday the prices plunged 10% for no reason. That's what they had to do to get it under, and they held it for all these years. So anyway, what they've done is they've created this massive trend line going down from the 2011 attacks to 2013, through the Draghi, whatever it takes, through the Brexit, the Trump election. And when it finally does break above that line, after all that work, it's really hard to get it back below. And that's what we're doing in the case of both the 200-week moving average, not 200-day, 200-week, which is a tremendously long amount of time. It's a 4-year moving average. And this 5.5-year downtrend line, which I've been talking about ad infinitum. In fact, I wrote Thursday, ultra bullish trends in the 5.5-year downtrend line war, a day before the jobs report, which everyone was expecting was going to be some massively good number and they were going to trash gold. So I think that we have the winds at our back in politically, economically, socially, monetarily. Everything is going our way, except they're still there fighting to the death, and they're slowly but surely losing these battles. All that's left is, man, I wrote years ago, last to go, and I said the Dow Jones propaganda average and paper, gold, and silver markets are the two most important battlefronts out there to win the war, basically. And that was before cryptocurrency came around. So as I was saying yesterday and writing about, you know, what used to be for the cartel, what I called a one front war in the paper, gold, silver markets. So, you know, all they had to do was just, you know, naked short on the COMEX. And, you know, now that's being exposed. The Deutsche Bank guys are out there. But that's all they had to do. But now it's a three-front war because, as I said, they've created this impending physical shortage. And at the same time, now they have to fight the cryptocurrencies, which are increasingly taking, you know, front center stage as a potential monetary threat. And that's what I said this years ago. It seems like in cryptocurrency time, I wrote a year ago, why Bitcoin will make gold and silver go up. I said it's going to be perceived as the bigger monetary threat because from a day-to-day utilitarian standpoint, it's by far the bigger threat. Gold and silver get mistaken as practical for being, you know, day-to-day money, but they're not. You know, you're not going to walk around the streets giving people bars of gold. No, it's the greatest store of value asset mankind has ever known. And now that cryptocurrencies are here, and look, it'll take time for them to gain traction. They've only been around for a little bit, but you know, time moves very fast these days. It's going to isolate gold and silver into being able to focus on being that store of value at a time when it's in the tightest supply demand fundamentals that it's ever been in. So I think, you know, the powers that be are fighting many, many wars. Not only that, they now are losing some of their key guys. They got Donald Trump in there who's making life difficult for them and what's going to go on in Italy and potentially Spain and, you know, Greece. I read today 98% of the people are unhappy. I mean, something's going to give soon.
Greece is back in the news. You know, you thought like, we fixed that problem. What's going on here? How could the people be unhappy? Why would they ever be unhappy?
I still remember, it's only a few years ago where I said Greece was my number one most likely catalyst. In fact, I said Greece, probably 3 years ago, I said Greece and India were the two, at that time, areas which I thought were the most likely to catalyze the big one. And Greece, you know, for all they say, well, it's been bailed out. No, it hasn't been bailed out. I mean, all that happened was against the will of the people who voted, Oxy. They didn't want a bailout. You know, the guy who came in saying, I won't take a bailout, took enough money for them to pay their bills a couple of months at a time. And they haven't even done the austerity measures they were supposed to do to get those bills. But of course, Europe is terrified of just cutting them off because then they will Grexit and they'll default on 400 billion euros of debt and everyone else will do the same thing. And that's the end of the euro. But the point is, Greece, as I said, 98% of the people said they're unhappy and that the economy stinks and they're all angry. And now they're up for another, quote, bailout next month, which, you know, at first they said it's going to happen. Now it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So what's going to happen? I mean, are they going to Grexit or not? Yes, of course they're going to. Maybe it is the black swan event of this summer. And as for India, well, I had no idea that their psychotic prime minister would take the society cashless, which is another reason why the cryptocurrencies have exploded, which is putting further pressure on the powers that be to keep the game in order.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And just when you think it can't get any worse, no doubt it will. I mean, bank bailouts used to be big news in the world, Andy. I don't know. Nobody seems to be concerned about this one, do they?
Well, again, it's all a matter of historic, unrelenting market manipulation. I mean, you look at the Dow today or NASDAQ up 19 points. I mean, exactly why would the stock market be up on a day where all these bad things are happening? I mean, can you imagine a bank bailout being a cause of relief? Yeah. And a bailout and bail in. OK, actually, it's not even a bailout. A bailout would mean that like TARP, like they gave them money to keep going. Here they said you're bankrupt. Your stock is zero. Your bonds are zero. That's the sixth biggest bank in a major European nation. This is of which there are many others everyone knows that are in the same situation as them, including probably Banco Santander, who took them over. This is not a source of relief. This is the PPT, which, you know, they said that, you know, that the Bank of Japan admitted they owned half of the ETFs 2 years ago. They probably own all of them by now. Well, how much do you think of the ETFs do you think the PPT owns? And the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, which is the PPT, the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and the Federal Reserve itself. I mean, you know, the dead ringer algorithm I've been talking about for 5.5 years on the, you know, where the Dow bottoms every single day at the time of the Fed's open market operations at 10 a.m. How much does the Fed own? I mean, how much more bonds does the Fed own than they say, given that last year, somehow interest rates, look, last year we were told we were in this great recovery. Everything was great. Stock markets is great. And yet it was a fact that the Chinese, Russians, Arabs, and Japanese were all major net sellers of treasuries. And yet interest rates went down here during what's supposedly this great economy. Okay. Who do you think was buying those bonds? It was the Fed. They probably own another $1 trillion worth of bonds. They probably own, you know, we learned yesterday that the European Central Bank owns No, global central banks own a third of all of the sovereign bonds out there. A third of all of them. That's why you have no volatility. There's no liquidity left anymore. There's no trading going on.
Yeah.
And if they own a third of it all on the books, how much do they own off the books? Half? Do they own half of all the global stocks and bonds? Certainly half of the bonds. And who knows what percentage of the stocks? And at some point, again, it's a Ponzi scheme. How far can you go with this? If the Japanese own all of the stocks, right? How do you make the prices go up anymore? Do you literally just say, we're going to create complex algorithms that enable us to do wash sale trades at increasingly high prices and no one will be able to figure this out?
Yeah. Yeah. This is, and we're not even talking about the perilous conditions of governments. Illinois gets cut to just a couple of clicks above junk. And hey, we didn't even mention Amazon's new discounted Prime, where they'll cut the cost to $5.99 a month if you're on food stamps. I mean, what is that telling you?
Yeah, I read, I just read that there's, I'm not even sure how they do it, but I read it on Zero Hedge last month, that there's a German chain, there's two German chains. I think they're called like Aldi and Lidl or something.
Yeah.
And they're both like the Walmarts of Germany. Have you heard of them?
Yep, I've heard of them. Not real familiar with them, but I have seen them. Yeah.
Apparently, their business model allows them to sell at prices that will undercut Walmart significantly. I'm not sure how that works, but it was on Zero Hedge, and they said that they are already causing major damage in Europe, and they are going to be opening stores en masse in the United States starting this year, and in a few years from now, they're going to have hundreds of these stores. So, yes, deflation is the word. People don't have any money now, and these economies of scale are overwhelming, you know, the business environment even more. And, you know, mostly they have to do it because people don't have any money. I mean, when you look around at what people are spending money on and what they're not spending on, because it used to be, you could say, even a year or two ago, you'd say, well, you know, I go to the neighborhood restaurant and it's packed so on a Friday night. So that must mean that things are different. But, you know, it is different because you look around the stores at what people are buying. I think of what I buy. Yeah, I guess I'm a thrifty guy. But, I go into big stores and I buy almost nothing, or I buy the cheapest possible thing because, you know, we were talking the other day about like bar mitzvahs, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I grew up in Long Island where everyone had to do an expensive bar mitzvah, right? I mean, you had to. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, my brother is having one for his son next year. They're doing it at a bar with someone else, like a sports bar. And it's partly because people have less money than they did years ago and they have more worries because the cost of living is exploding, particularly in New York, like housing costs and all those kind of things. But there's also a mindset change of, look, these are not the same times they used to be. What is the benefit of spending $15,000 on a bar mitzvah? I need $15,000. I could do a lot of stuff with $15,000, right, including, by the way, saving for, college, retirement, all these kind of, you know, mortgage payments, vacations, cars, things we need in life because of high cost of living. So again, that's a far bigger reason why the retail Armageddon is going on than the fact that Amazon is there. I mean, yeah, Amazon is doing its thing, but that's just a natural technology evolution, just like Bitcoin is a natural technology evolution. Technology comes in and destroys the inefficient. As I was saying yesterday to someone, you know, I was talking the other day about how, you know, pen and paper. I have this pad here, right?
Right.
Someone was saying, well, pens are so expensive. And I go, that's so ridiculous because why even buy a pen? This pad of paper that's sitting in front of me, you know, I have a job, a full-time job, right? I work all the time. It might take me 2 years to go through a pad of paper because there's nothing, there's no need to write anything anymore. I type, I text, I email, I type on my computer, right?
Yeah, the only time I ever really write is when I go to somebody's office and I need to take a few notes. But even then, if I'm at a conference, I just use the notes feature on my smartphone and take notes on that.
Yeah, so, and hence, you know, the consolidation and collapse of Staples. You go to Staples, there's never anyone there. Another thing, like printer ink, right? They made a big deal, these HP all there. Now you can't buy, copies of ink. You have to use their programs, you know, which, so that, you know, because you can't like put in simulated ink. You know what I'm talking about, generics, because they change their computer programs so you can't do it and they think they're so smart. So what people are doing is going, oh, wait a second, why am I printing stuff anyway? I can scan everything. I can email it to myself and put it on calendars so that it tells me. So again, you know, that kills HP, that kills Staples, that kills all these things. And the thing that I was going to get to, you know, starting from the beginning of this conversation is, you know, I just read the other day, mainstream says that a third of all the malls in America will close by 2020. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And the faster the better. I don't even remember being in a mall. It's such a waste of time in retail space and time among anything. Like who wants to spend time in a mall? I mean, that's a thing of the past. So that is true. And think of how many jobs will be gone then in the commercial real estate. But the thing that that is truly, to me, the most, anachronism, right?
Yeah.
Like Fred Flintstone, you know, with televisions and stuff,
right,
is banks in modern world. Banks are today completely useless. Or let's say the use case of a bank when we were kids, the use case of a bank 15 years ago, there's about 5% of that use case left. The only reasons that I could see for going into a bank right now is, well, one would be the ATM machine, except I don't use cash anymore. I mean, I literally don't use the ATM maybe more than once a year because I just don't use cash. And that doesn't make money for them anyway, the ATM machines, because it's free if you're in the bank. And the other reason would be, okay, I need like a gun check, a firearms check, right? Because I'm buying a gun. So I need a money order. They only take a money order. Okay, I have to go to a bank for that. Yes, a bank wire. I might have to do that. But guess what? Guess what? Like with Bitcoin or something, now you don't need a bank wire because eventually you'll be able to just, it's not even wire. Cryptocurrency, you just send it to someone instantaneously. And even now the need for bank wires is lessening. There's just less and less cases where you're sending big bank wires. But the point is, I look at these banks sitting on my street. Lending has collapsed, right? The banks don't even lend anymore because they're insolvent. They just take the Fed's free money and reinvest it in the rigged markets. People aren't borrowing anymore, and now you have these shadow markets. Like people, it's one of these terms like Ponzi scheme. People don't quite know what shadow banking means. What it means is that people are borrowing money outside of the financial system. It's more efficient. It's cheaper, just like cryptocurrency is more efficient and cheaper than fiat currency, not to mention in Bitcoin's case, deflationary as opposed to hyperinflationary. So I look at these banks all the places I'm going, what the hell is the purpose of them being there? So I will make a bold prediction right now that 5 years from now, 20% of all the banks will be closed. And 20 years from now, 90% of the banks will be closed because they are useless in today's society. So on the one hand, it's going to be because of the change in technology. And then the other hand is just a change in needs. And think of how many jobs will be lost there. And these are irreplaceable jobs. They'll be replaced by robots, not even robots. They'll just be replaced by computers and technology. That's it.
Yeah. Well, not to mention all the driverless cars. I mean, that is like for certain that's going to happen. I don't see anything that can stop that revolution as well. So what are we going to do, Andy? We're all going to be at home doing podcasts?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, think about all the debt that's attached to all those businesses. I mean, cars is a perfect one because forget the driverless cars. The fact is the car industry is dying from oversupply, horrible demographics. And of course, they've been, you know, the people have so little money that they've been lending subprime and leasing to the point where, you know, the new between that and student loans, it's the bubble is as big for those two sectors as the mortgage subprime lending was in 2008. And the cars, you know, going forward, you look at people who ignore demographics. It's incredible. You know, I mean, I've agreed with Harvey Dent, I've agreed with him 100% about demographics. I've been writing about him for years as well. And there's a new guy, Chris Hamilton, at this Economica blog, who's been writing about it too. You know, we're at now basically 0%. We're about to go negative in population growth year over year for 18 to 65 year olds in America. Well, who's going to buy the new cars now? Who's going to buy the houses? The average millennial, and I forgot what the new generation is called after that, Gamma or something, whatever.
Generation Z.
Yeah. They have less than $1,000 of savings. And with millennials, we're talking about up to 34 years old. Okay. I'm not talking about a college kid. Wow. To think if I was 34 years old and still had no savings, because I had no savings in better economic times. I mean, I became 30 years old in the year 2000. So I got to age 30 in good times, but I didn't have a penny to my name until I was maybe 26. But by the time I was 30, I had a good amount of savings. So to think that there are people now who are age 34 who still have not a penny to their name, and look what the world poses for them ahead of them. I mean, the outlook couldn't be worse. So again, there's just, and you look at all the debt that's been created just to keep these fundamentals from coming out to the light of day, and how much more debt is going to be piled onto that, and how many currencies are going to be hyperinflated in the process as if they're not already. I mean, it's dire. It's scary. I mean, I'm not the doom pointer. Okay. I'm not the doom, boom and gloom. You know, I'm just stating facts. And that's why people listen to me and read me. I simply state facts. And the facts tell us there is no way in hell that this will end anyway, but catastrophically. And, you know, it's going to be, there's going to be great changes. But again, for all the people who think, well, we can just do this and fix it. No, there's going to be a catastrophic collapse. And from the ashes, then these great changes can come. But you cannot get to the great changes. You cannot get there until you get over this gap. And so one way or the other, this fiat currency system, which in my view, the largest fiat Ponzi scheme, most destructive of all time, is in its terminal malignant phase, is going to die spectacularly and likely a lot sooner than people think.
Yeah, well, the timing is always the bitch. We don't know when that's going to be. Anyways, that's it for this week. So find out more about Miles Franklin and subscribe to Andy's Daily Missive and frequent audio blogs at milesfranklin.com. And while you're at it, go over to FSN, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And we will catch up with you again next week, Andy.
Looking forward to it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.